You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Chantal Garg, who the occasion for which is the publication of her memoir, which is called Unearthed, The Lies We Carry and the Truths They Bury. And magically, there's a picture of it right there on your screen. And Chantal, thanks so much for being willing to have this conversation. And I'm really looking forward to it, both because of this, of the subject of the book, and but also because I so enjoyed our first conversation, which was really pleasant and great. So nice to see you again. And thanks again for being
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, David. I enjoyed our first conversation as well. And I've been looking forward to this.
Ditto. Yeah. Okay. So maybe let's set the stage and, you know, by you telling people what relevant facts there are, whether it's your education or what you're doing, the work that you're doing now, the job you have, and we'll start there. How's that?
Sure. So I'm an executive coach and a facilitator at the Stanford Graduate School of Business for their interpersonal dynamics course. Just wrote my book. I also speak at various engagements on women's empowerment, healing, what it means to evolve from our inherited narratives into a more authentic form of leadership. And so I work with leaders across the globe, actually, in terms of just improving their leadership.
Hmm. And, you know, we didn't talk about this the first time. It was not my impression that you wrote the book in some way dovetailing with the work you do. But there certainly has to be some sort of bleed over, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when I've been coaching for over a decade, and a lot of my clients are women, it seems that a lot of South Asian women are sort of drawn to my coaching style and drawn to me. And so I was coaching a lot of them. And in the meantime, I was doing my own healing. You know, my book is about my journey through spiritual and sexual abuse and the healing from that. And it is a lot of me taking a look at my own inherited narratives and whether or not they were truly mine. Hmm. And how do I, even if they weren't mine, how do I go about honoring my culture in a way that I'm not leaving myself behind?
So maybe say something about that your culture. So
yeah.
How were you raised? Where were you raised? By whom were you raised,
et cetera? Yes. So my parents left India in the 70s. I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and raised in the US. We traveled quite a bit when I was younger. But my parents raised me as if, I always say, I was born in Punjab, Louisiana, because my parents sort of raised me as if, you know, we were in 1970s Punjab, India.
Yeah.
So very traditionally, but yet in the American culture. And so I was very much trying to straddle these two cultures that didn't seem to want to meet. They were kind of like day and night a lot of times. And so it was very challenging to find my own identity. It almost felt like people were always trying to name it for me.
People on both cultures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so it took a long time before I got a chance to say, no, I get to actually claim what's really mine. And what I was seeing in the women that I was coaching, and honestly, just across the board in coaching, is that people struggle with this universally. So while my experiences around the abuse and everything that I experienced were quite extreme, I think the underlying themes are very universal. And so as I started seeing this, especially in women, women leaders who were extremely educated, extremely successful, my sense was that, you know, our stories need to be told. And so I wanted to tell mine as sort of an example and use those themes further to develop my coaching. So there is that overlap for sure.
There is.
Yeah.
And then the work you do at Stanford is not the coaching. That is something separate. The work you do at Stanford is working on leadership skills of a certain sort.
So at Stanford, I'm a T group facilitator for the interpersonal dynamics program. So there's a whole course on interpersonal dynamics where people are learning how to interact for the sake of influence, for the sake of connection, learning to give and receive feedback, all of those kinds of things. So I facilitate that course. I'm also an executive coach for their business school graduates.
I see. What drew you to that? Well, like when you went, you got an MBA someplace.
I did. Yeah. Yes.
And did you know that's what you wanted to do?
I had no idea. I mean, David, I knew. Yeah. You know, growing up in Indian culture, if there are any Indian folks out there listening, you'll relate to this, right? Like my parents wanted me to be a doctor, an engineer, or a lawyer. There weren't really other options.
Right, back exactly.
then. Even the idea of a computer engineer wasn't a big deal back then.
Right.
And I could not be more non-interested in those things. So I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I ended up getting a undergraduate degree in mass communication, which was kind of interesting. And then ended up doing an MBA because I figured, okay, I could do something with that. And then along the way, as I was doing my MBA, met these folks who were doing also a master's in healthcare administration. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do some good in the world, right? So I went ahead and I did that, started my career off in healthcare, actually.
Really?
In healthcare administration, healthcare finance, which when you get to know me, that's really odd. And, you know, by fluke, I ended up working on this program where like all the departments within the hospital, they were getting benchmarked against other departments and hospitals across the country.
Right.
And I was in charge of delivering people's results. And what ended up happening is as I went around the hospital delivering these results, I ended up coaching them on like, well, you know, if you got your team together in this way, or if you spoke to your folks in this way, maybe you could increase your numbers, increase your scores and things like that. And so sort of as I was doing that, there was an organization out in Washington, D.C. called the Advisory Board Company, which is a healthcare think tank. And they had come out to the hospital that I was working at just to do some consulting work and saw what I was doing. And they're like, no, you're actually more aligned with leadership development. And that really sparked an interest because I've always been sort of a self-development junkie. And so they recruited me. I ended up going and doing some work for them. In their leadership academy. And then from there, it just sort of evolved. And
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it makes sense in that serendipitous way that lives get put together sometimes,
yes.
if we're lucky. But okay, so that's who you are in the professional world. But that's not necessarily what this book is about.
No.
The book is as I understand it, and I have yet to get it. I've yet to receive it.
Okay. Yeah.
Whatever. Maybe it's because they're selling like hotcakes. Who knows?
One would hope.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? It's a very personal story.
Yes.
And so perhaps you, I mean, you already made reference to the abuse, spiritual and sexual.
Yes.
So could you... Are you comfortable talking about that?
Yeah. So, you know, as I wrote the book, again, my purpose was for people to understand a couple of things. One, how does this happen? Right? Because when I look at myself, it's like I said, I was born and raised in the U.S. I've got two master's degrees. The sexual abuse didn't start until I was 26 years old. So how does that happen? And so in the book, I talk about my upbringing and sort of the teachings that I was raised with in terms of what it means to be a good Indian woman. And a lot of that is around silence equals loyalty to your culture, to your heritage, to your ancestry, to your lineage. The times where I felt uncomfortable, I remember... And this was before the abuse with this spiritual so-called spiritual teacher, there was a time where I was like, I want to say maybe 12 or 14 years old. And my dad, there was this guy who was a friend of my father's, and he had volunteered to teach me one of the languages from India. And I was very attached to my culture as a child because my parents raised me this way. I talk about it in the book. My father, like the lullabies that they would sing me at night would be Indian patriotic songs, which is wild. But anyway, that's another story. But so I was very attached to my culture. And so this guy volunteered to teach me this language. And so my dad dropped me off at this man's place of work, and he owned these hotels. And so he dropped me off there saying, oh, you can get a lesson and I'll come pick you up. So as I was there, the man, you know, I was 12, 14. He had me, he pulled me onto his lap. He started tickling me, just did these things that were just completely inappropriate. When my dad picked me up, I remember rushing him out the door, and my dad could tell that something was wrong. And so I'm sitting in the car with him, and I'm like, I didn't like the way that man handled me. Like, he was tickling me. He was doing these things. And my dad's response was, oh, he didn't mean that. He was just being loving. And so starting from a pretty young age, I was told these very contradictory things. It was almost like your body is a temple. You need to protect your purity. But yet, if it's giving you signals that you're not comfortable, don't trust that because you don't know the other person's intention. Right? So there were already these contradictions happening.
And so there's this story that it was, he was just being affectionate. He was just being playful. He was just being loving. If he was not being those things, it was a prelude to trying to be sexual, would that have been okay within the culture or no? Would your father have still, I mean, obviously speculating, right? But in Indian culture, is there a kind of a, either a wink-wink or a more explicit, well, men are attracted to women and you're a young woman now, or, you know, you're a kid, but in there, would that have been okay?
You know, I don't know that I can say what that would be universally in my culture.
Yeah.
I do think that there is a pattern of people protecting older men. So even if, and not that that would be okay. I think if it had gone further, I think my father would have said, okay, we're not going to go back there, but we're also not going to speak up about it. Right. So it would have been like, let's protect in silence. And then that protection again becomes, yes, okay, I'm not going to drop you off there, but then it also becomes my responsibility. Like, don't go around him.
Right.
Versus let's speak up, call this out and say, you know, where else might this have happened?
Yeah.
And so, I do think that men are very much protected and get away with a lot in our culture.
Well, yes. I mean, it's
pretty universal.
It's hard. I was about to say, it's hard to make that just a story about Indian culture.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, I don't know when this is being viewed, but when we're speaking, we are in the middle of, you know, the whole Trump Epstein conversation. It's hard not to, and I get it. It's those that was with young girls, quote, underage, whatever that means.
Right.
And you know, men getting away with things is clearly the through line.
Yeah.
I suspect that's, you know, I mean, look at this last year in the trial of that fellow in France who was. You know, I mean,
it's horrific.
Yeah, it's horrific. It's and it's so widespread. There's so many instances. It's hard not to tell the story as, hey, men seem to be getting away with stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I think every culture, from what it seems like we all just have our own flavor of it.
Yes.
But it's a pretty universal issue.
You bet.
Yeah.
But would you say that the book is is directed at women's empowerment, or is it a broader theme?
You know, when I first started, that's what I thought it was. And then as I've written it, I've gotten messages back from, what's really surprised me is I've gotten messages back from like Indian men who are like, idea. And this has given me more insight to be a better father and a husband. And so
that's great to hear.
It was probably one of the best days of my life to get that message. Yeah. And so I hesitate to say it's just for women. I think it's for everyone.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, you know, I haven't, like I said, I haven't read it. And just the idea that it's being written, that it was written, feels uplifting.
Mm. You know,
damn,
thank you.
Good. Right. You know?
Yeah.
So, okay. But, there's another slice to this, and that is, you mentioned several times now, spiritual. So,
yes.
So what's the relationship between the cultural piece and this? Well, maybe you should just tell the story in as much detail or not as you want. But it involved the spiritual leader that your family was devoted to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as a child, we were very, very religious. My parents are still very religious. And so, you know, there's this idea of having a guru in our culture, you know, like a spiritual teacher of sorts. And so in the book, it goes through, like, you know, the guru who assaulted me wasn't the first guru we had. There was other stories. And so they're mixed in there. And then we ended up following this guy and had followed him for almost 10 years before he actually assaulted me. And the teachings of the guru.
Before he assaulted you sexually.
Yes. But Thank you. Yes. But the spiritual abuse.
Talking about spiritual abuse. Did they go together or was there?
Yeah, no, that's a great curiosity. Yes. I would say, I would say the spiritual abuse probably happened throughout, because starting from the very beginning, it was this idea that, you know, your guru says something and you don't question it. There's a saying in our culture that once you bow down to a guru, if you get up, it's, the word is haram, which means like, it's just, it's one of the worst things you could do, right? Is to get back up. There's another saying that I actually talk about in my book where, and it's a poet from like a Sufi poet, has this saying that your guru and God are standing next to each other. And you have this dilemma of who do you bow down to first? And so obviously you would bow down to your guru first because he was the one who connected you to God.
Mm.
Right. Oh, so the guru is put on such a high pedestal. And so growing up, I wouldn't make any major decisions without calling him first. And mind you, this man was followed by millions.
Does everybody have access?
No.
No.
And that's
about your relationship with your family's relationship with this guru.
Yeah. And that was another thing that I think made the abuse possible, right? It felt, it was very easy to feel special knowing that I had access to this man. You know, you'd go to India and people would be like everywhere. I mean, you'd stand up in a crowd and you couldn't see the end of the crowd. That's how massive it was. And yet I could have one-on-one time with this person. And so I would call him before I decided my major in college. I would just call him before we would take a major trip. I would call him before my father would call him before he bought a house, before he bought a car. Like it was just, you know, and this guy didn't know what he was doing. Apparently everybody thought he did, you know? So there was the abuse.
No, you want the blue metallic finish.
Right. But you know, everybody felt like we needed his blessings in order for anything to be successful. And so it got to a point where we couldn't think for ourselves. And then on top of that, you know, and who knows why this was, maybe it was because he had so many followers, but there were times where he would be hot and cold in the same moment with you. And so the way I would interpret that was, oh, he's just testing me to see how unconditional my devotion is. And there's all these stories that we would make up based on this narrative of what a guru and a disciple is and what that relationship should look like.
Wow.
And so that's where the spiritual abuse comes in, because it basically takes away all of your agent. It took away all of my agency in that relationship and in life.
So that's a, I don't want to leave that topic, but that's a critique. I'm not sure it was intended that way, but that's a critique of the more than simply this guru. Mm-hmm. But the entire enterprise of, you know, if taking away your agency is abusive, and I would agree with you, it is. Mm-hmm. It ought to be. And So even if this fellow was benevolent, the devotion to that sort of whatever that word would be, devotion or reliance, dependence on, is that intended
from his perspective,
from your perspective, are you offering a critique? I don't mean this as a gotcha question.
Yeah.
I mean, are you offering a critique of that entire enterprise?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's this narrative that, you know, in order to reach God, you've got to find someone who's already done it.
Right.
That doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, I mean, if we're all equal, which is what I believe, right? If God created us all, then I think we all have an equal chance at,
yeah,
you know. And I also have this belief that God is actually within all of us. I don't know that I believe in the man in the sky. So that's a whole other thing as well. Yeah.
We could talk about that, but that goes to places that, whatever. Okay. And I may have this wrong, but I don't think so. So there it is. Your entire family is embedded in somehow in this relationship.
Yeah.
And then the sexual abuse piece of it was nowhere to be found until the day before, the night before your wedding.
Yes.
And how did that unfold? Like, you know, it was like, you need to come to me before your wedding. And did you go to him seeking something? Were you summoned by, like, was this a plan? I don't mean on your part. I mean on his.
It's a good question. I have no idea if he planned it or not. So I was getting married in his village in India. And the day before, you know, he was coming to our house because we had a little cottage in the village. And so he was coming to see us, offer blessings, whatever, just visit the family. So he came, and I had some doubts about this marriage, but at the same time, it was like everything was already in motion. Things were happening. So I was like, okay, I'll just talk to my guru about it.
This was not an arranged marriage, or it was not? Okay.
It was not an arranged marriage. But it was a guy who was sort of within this guru's community, who I had only met, you know, like intimately met, I want to say like 7 months earlier. And we had basically been traveling around India together, following this man. And then we decided to get married. And so I had my doubts about it. And there were so many different dynamics happening within my family, between me and my mother at the time. All these different things that just sort of had me go in a direction where I didn't feel like I was being controlled, but yet I actually was, you know, but I was just trying to find a direction to run in.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more detail in the book around that, but I had some doubts. So anyway, the guru came, and I got some time with him, and I viewed this guru almost as a father. You know, my father and I, we didn't have the best relationship. My father wasn't the greatest at offering, you know, affection or anything like that. You know, and he was doing the best he could, but, you know, I never felt close to him. And so in that moment, when I was sort of scared to get married the next day, I turned to my guru. And so I was sitting with him in a room, and I looked at him, and I asked him if I could have a hug. And again, I'm looking at him as a father. And even as those words left my mouth, I couldn't believe I had said them. Because if you look at who this man is, it's like, that's weird to ask for that. But again, I was in a pretty vulnerable place. So he looks at me and he says, "Can you handle it?" I'm like, "Can I handle it?" That's even weirder, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, I think so." And so he got up and then, you know, rather than hugging me, he started to fondle me. And, you know, it went from there. And I did not understand what was happening. I remember even in the moment just being completely confused. And yet this is a man who I don't question. I don't question his power. I don't question what he's doing. I'm sitting there thinking there's something here that I'm not understanding. And I think I actually left my body. I think I disassociated. And then the crazy thing was, like, after it happened, he was like, "Don't tell anybody about this. It could be really bad for me." And I'm like, you know, I mean, as crazy as that sounds right now in the moment, I don't think I even knew what had hit me. It was just so out of the ordinary.
And he was an older man. He was, my father like age. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's just, it's interesting. What'd you think of your, do you think when you look back at yourself, were you naive or were you just down a path that is something that is different from the one you're on now?
Definitely a different path.
Yeah.
I think a different path. I was naive. I did not have access to my own power or agency at all. You know, I'll tell you at the end of the book, I talk about this full-on self-defense training that I did. And I did this just 2 years ago. And in that self-defense training, I reenacted this moment where the guru first assaulted me. And so in this training, there's these people who get fully padded up and you can basically beat the shit out of them. Right. And, so we reenacted this thing, and just because, like, I guess the way development works or whatever, my brain went back to being that girl who was assaulted. And so when this fully padded person who looks nothing like my then guru comes in, he's like, "Well, why don't you lay down?" I actually found myself almost ready to lay down.
Oh, wow.
My brain went back to that place. And it was very, very slowly that, like, I started to say, "Nope, I'm not going to do that." And it got louder and louder and louder until I could actually flip the script. But yeah. And so it was a different person. It was a different person. I didn't have my agency. I was definitely going down a different path, thinking that someone else was going to lead me to some sort of divinity, that I didn't have the power to do that myself.
Okay, so, and again, I apologize if I have this wrong, but you didn't keep it a secret, right? I mean,
no.
people knew about it. So, and what was the reaction around you? I mean, I guess I'm thinking back to the title of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's the lies we carry and the truths they bury. And yet it wasn't entirely, you didn't entirely bury it, right? I mean, other people knew and yet weren't there in the way you would hope, or I would hope for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what was going on in their minds because they weren't forthcoming with that. But the next day I did tell my then husband about it. He tried to approach the guru about what had happened. And you know, also
he had a relationship with the guru as well, because he was part of this group.
Yes, he had a very strong relationship with this guru. So when I told him what had happened, he was actually furious at me.
At you?
At me, yeah. And he was like, "Okay, we got to get this straightened out. I'm going to go talk to him tomorrow." And I'm like, I mean, I, I was panicked at that point because I didn't know how he was going to respond. I wasn't supposed to tell anybody. And now my husband's going to go to him and talk to him about this. So we're sitting in this ashram area, sort of in a little bit of a secluded area where no one can hear us. And my then husband asks him about it. And the guru got furious. Like, and he didn't, you know, he's not known for that. Like, he's very calm, collected all the time. I had never seen him do this. And he immediately like got up in a rage, and he used to wear these wooden sandals, and he got up in a rage. He flicked off his sandal, and like the floor was marble. So you can imagine wood hitting marble. It echoed through the entire ashram, and he walked away. And so then the guru's brother came and got us and brought us out to where all the other people were. And as soon as we came out there, my then husband and my parents were there waiting for us because it was the day after our wedding. And as we walked out there, both sets of parents came up to us. They didn't look at my husband. They looked at me and they said, "What did you do to make him so angry?" So yeah, I tried to speak up, but I was immediately silenced, and given the power of that community, I wasn't going to try again.
Did they know as well, or were they told as well?
No.
They just knew you had done.
Whatever. I had done something.
You had done something wrong that enraged the sleazebag. Who? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The guru.
That's a good word.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not my guru. So whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, my relationship with my then husband was already fractured given this whole interaction. So I wasn't going to perpetuate that with my parents and then my in-laws, who I was then going to go live with. So, yeah, it was a mess.
So you were married in what year?
So that was, I want to say, 2001.
2001. Yeah. And, well, the book just came out this year, correct?
Yeah.
25. Yeah. But this, and your husband found out the next day, and I know that relationship did not last.
Yeah.
But how long did it last?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. So it was a short-ish relationship.
Yeah.
And for that year and a half, when was it that it became more widely known what had gone on? Or was the book the event of unearthing this?
The book was the event.
Holy,
I mean,
Lord.
I told my parents. So I, you know, like after this event where I tried to speak up, nobody listened, I buried it too, right? At that point. And I was like, okay, there's something here I don't understand. I've done something wrong. Like I took responsibility for something that I shouldn't have, right? I said, I've done something wrong. Obviously there's something here I don't understand. I don't want to keep speaking up. I continued my loyalty to this guru. Even as I left my ex, because there was a lot of abuse happening there, I didn't want to leave my ex because I was like, we got married under his blessings. If I leave my ex, that's going to look bad on the guru.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was a whole thing. So I maintained that loyalty. And then it wasn't until I was remarried, I had my first child, and then I was pregnant with my second child, my daughter. And I was in the middle of teaching a yoga class that something hit. And basically I was teaching this yoga class. I think I shared this with you last time, but I was teaching a beginner's yoga class. There was this guy in the front row of the yoga class who was doing handstands in the middle of a sun salutation. I was getting really irritated because he was clearly intimidating the other people in the class. And so I started asking the class questions of like, you know, is your practice serving you? Or are you serving your practice? Like what's really happening here? And I was just challenging the class a little bit. And I remember after that class, I'm pregnant with my daughter. I go into the bathroom and I look in the mirror and I have this question. I'm like, is your practice serving you?
Uh-huh.
You know, and is your spiritual practice serving you? And in that moment, it was kind of like this big aha, I don't know, aha or oh shit moment.
And you were still involved or not involved, but you were still, you and your family are still engaged with this guru.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And I, yeah. I think it was, there were so many things that contributed to it. My then husband and now husband did not believe in the guru. And so he always sort of questioned, like, why do you need that? So I think that was one way in which there was an opportunity for reflection.
Yeah.
And then the other piece was the practice of the physical practice of yoga had me start listening to my body in a way that I couldn't ignore anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was both. And then, you know, I was pregnant with a girl and it almost felt like,
yeah,
you right. know,
what are you going to tell
yeah.
her?
Right. Yeah.
Oof. Wow. So, and yet, do I have this right? The abuse, the sexual abuse continued.
Mm-hmm.
It was not just once.
No, it was for the duration of following him after that. Yeah.
And he stopped being furious.
Yeah.
Oh, and now it was just sort of built into the.
Yeah. It was the weirdest thing. It was the weirdest thing. That same day that he fluck off his shoes or whatever, we went to his house later that evening in the village and we're sitting on the grass and he's on his, you know, pedestal or whatever. And we're all staring at him the way we normally do. And I'm looking at him and that day, like my devotion hadn't gone, but at the same time I was annoyed because I'm looking at him. I'm like, how, this is so weird. Like nothing has changed.
And was there any indication before, or is there any indication that, that he did this with other people, or was everything a secret? I mean, you're one person who, you know, you broke the directive, right? You told one person.
Yeah.
But is there any reason, do you have any reason to believe that this was more widespread among the followers? Like was he doing this with other people and just everybody just remained silent?
I think so.
Wow.
I can't say for 100% sure, but I mean, there were girls and women who would go into his room all the time. There were friends that I had who, I mean, we talked sometimes and it was like, there were some weird things that were happening. Even after I left the community, there were several people that I tried to talk to who I was really close to. But it didn't seem right for them. They didn't feel like it was right for them to leave the community. And so, you know, obviously you can't force people to do things.
No, sure.
So,
right.
I just sort of quietly left.
God, I hope this doesn't saturating the video, this conversation. I'm watching myself get incredibly pissed off, and not my place, I guess. But it's
well, I appreciate that though.
Yeah. Okay. Do you out the fellow by name? Is he still alive?
He's still alive. I don't out him by name.
Is he still a guru? Is he still doing his thing and has followers and all of that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason that I don't out him, you know, he's pretty powerful. Like I said, millions and millions of followers,
yeah.
Some people who are in pretty high places. So I'm not that, I mean that.
No, I get it.
Yeah. And I guess where I see my lane and my work is to work with women to recognize that this stuff is out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you prevent it? How do you make yourself stable enough, strong enough? How do you make sure that you know you can recognize your own agency?
Yeah. Okay. So this too is not intended as a gotcha question or anything like that. But so given where we all are in the headlines, in the news, in this culture, does the conversation, whatever the conversation is, I mean, we know some of it is just stupid, but about you know, Epstein and Trump and these older men in positions of power doing things to young girls and others, and Like, that's your next book, by the way. But how does that all sit with you? I mean, I know that there have been, there's a lot of voices in that conversation.
Yeah.
Some of them are the voices of victims, mm-hmm. but not a lot of them.
Right.
And maybe they're keeping it to themselves, or maybe, but it's almost like it's still buried.
Yeah.
Right. Even as it's been revealed, it's so convenient that there's a dead guy and files that have,
yeah,
that supposedly have information. And I don't even mean about whether Trump,
yeah,
how Trump was involved, but just people obviously were involved and
right.
And hurt and all of that.
Yeah.
How do you make sense of that?
I mean, it's,
don't watch the news.
Yeah. It, you know, there's been a lot of healing over the last 10 years for me, like a lot of healing. And when I see these things, yeah, it's horrific. I try not to watch it. And at the same time, I think it's important to know,
yeah,
because it is prevalent. And in some ways, this is going to sound awful, but it's almost validating. Like, this is not, I'm not crazy. I'm not making this stuff up. It's real. It's out there and it's everywhere.
Have you been accused of that? Has anybody accused you of making it up? Well, now it's right. So you haven't named the person or the group or the whatever. And
right.
And that's not a criticism. It's just a fact. And I understand it, people who know you, and people, especially people who know you and have were or maybe are still in that group, or in that group of people who are followers.
Yeah.
Have you received any, I mean, you definitely got people saying thank you.
Yeah.
Have you gotten people saying shame on you for,
yeah,
you know, for calling this to attention? Because even if the people who read the book don't know who it is, the people who know you and the group know who it is.
Right, right.
So has anybody come knocking on your door and saying, how dare you?
Not yet. I expect it. And I'll also say not to my face.
Yeah, right. Sure.
You know?
Wow.
So, I mean, it's only been out since June.
Yeah.
So right. I would not be surprised if that happens.
We glanced over it just in the interest of time, and maybe that's a bad choice on my part, but the healing.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like there is something worthwhile about saying something about,
yeah,
that process. And maybe it's not obvious, but I'm assuming that the writing of the book in and of itself was part of that, mm-hmm, right? Or certainly played a role in healing.
Yeah.
But is there something, you're wiser about this than I will be. So is there something about the process of sort of undoing the knot,
mm-hmm,
that gets put together with culture and all of that stuff, that people ought to hear?
Yeah, it's, there's so much. I mean, the majority of the book is about the healing process. And so,
that's great.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, it takes, it's really scary, you know, like, it's scary to say these things to other people, you know, to tell these kinds of stories to other people, but it's actually almost scarier to say it to yourself, to recognize that this is what actually happened. And I was under an illusion, because your whole perspective, your whole life changes as soon as you own something like that. And so I think for me, it was really that moment when I was ready to say, I'm not willing to live with this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not willing to keep burying it. And from then it was like, okay, you know, I've got to deal with whatever comes my way. And so at first, you know, when I told my parents, they didn't completely understand. And so I went through this process of trying to, you know, extricate myself from the community, removing all of this man's pictures and all of his things from my home. There's a whole story in the book about how I, you know, drive to the casino dumpster because I didn't want to put his stuff in my garbage can. So, you know, but it's just this whole process. And then sitting with this idea, because this was spiritual, right? And so all of my tools, all of my faith, all of that, all of my protection, I would say, was wrapped up in my belief around this guru. And so when I let all that go, I felt completely exposed and vulnerable to whatever. And I viewed this man as having powers equivalent to God. So I didn't know what I was opening myself up to, because the power didn't just dissipate just because I no longer was following him. And so it was this whole process of kind of fake it till you make it, of I got what I need inside of me. And that sort of became my new mantra in a way. And I had to keep repeating it and trying to feel it until it was actually there. And then at the beginning of that process as well, I sort of, you know, I didn't want anything to do with my culture because it all felt very tainted for me. And so it took years before I could turn back around and say, okay, it can't be everything about the culture, right? There's got to be something. I mean, and there's beautiful things about India and Hinduism and all of those things. There's beautiful things in it. I don't call myself a Hindu today, but there are things about the culture and religion that I do hold on to. And so it was about being able to look at all of that amidst all the garbage that also exists and saying, what do I want to hold on to? What do I want to evolve? And especially now that I'm raising children, I don't want them to not know where they came from. You know, so it's looking at all of that and saying, how do we want to evolve this and honor it by evolving it rather than getting stuck in the past?
Yeah. Do your children, well, how old are your children?
13 and 15.
13 and 15. And is the 13-year-old or is it, who?
My daughter is the 13-year-old.
Who are you pregnant with? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have they either read the book or heard about the book or whatever?
Yeah, so they knew all the stories in the book before it came out. I did not want them hearing about this from someone else. My daughter is about a third of the way through the book. My son is your typical, he actually just turned 16. He's your typical 16-year-old boy. So he's like, I heard all the stories, Mom. I know one day I will read your book. So I'm like, that's fine, you know? So my daughter's going through it really slowly. We're processing, having lots of conversations.
I was going to say, do they ask you questions and want to have conversations? Or at least, yes, she does.
Yeah.
He's a boy. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he will get there too. I mean, we've had lots of conversations, but, you know, he's at a different phase of life. So.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I did not expect this. I did not expect this. I have so much feeling about this right now.
I would love to hear more about that.
That's not getting in a podcast. I'd be glad to tell you, it's so courageous that you've unearthed this, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Perfect title.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good job.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. It's what a story. What a story.
Yeah. And you asked also about the writing. And I would say, you know, like a lot of the things that happen at the end of the book that I put in there happened as I was writing it. So the writing process definitely contributed to the healing as well, for sure.
Yeah. I'll bet.
You know, I went to India for the first time in 16 years. 3 years ago. And that was as I was writing the book. So
has the guru, or people in whatever counts as his inner circle reached out to you about this? Do you have any idea if folks in the community know about this?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Yeah.
So you've really distanced yourself and vice versa.
Oh,
You're no longer, they're no longer.
Yeah.
Right. Two different worlds.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I can think of a really good present to send them. Yeah. Yeah. So before we stop, because what a shame, but before we stop, is there anything other than, hey, folks, this is a book to buy.
Yeah.
Other than that, is there something else that ought to be said that we'll smack our heads if we don't say it?
Yeah.
I'd always come back and do more, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I would say just read the book. I would love to hear how it lands for folks. On my website, people can reach out to me. I think when I look at what I'm really hoping to do in the world is really, it sounds so simple, but it really is this idea of getting people to question their own narratives, to see what's yours and what's not. I think we bring the past into the future and we have an opportunity to evolve. And if we look at the world today, as you alluded to, it's very clear that we need that. And so I just really hope that as people read this, there's obviously like this, a bit of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. And yes, the story is a little bit of extreme, but what I'm really hoping is that people can see themselves in some of these stories and start to question their own narratives and their own lives and their own things that are not serving them. And so, I would love to hear how things are landing for folks.
Yeah. Well, Chanchal Garg, thank you so much for being willing to have this conversation and about such a close to the bone situation, experience, insight. So I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, David.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.